All right, so let's fire up and get rolling. So what happened at about 10 to 1 was I was setting up my computer, this computer, which has all my stuff on it, and I had a cup of coffee here, and it spilled on it, so this computer doesn't start anymore. Now, I had a second computer I brought with me, just in case. So the only difference, I think everything's going to be fine here. The only difference is this is a 4-core, 8 gig of RAM, i7. This is a 1.3 gigahertz, 8 gig of RAM, Core 2 Duo. So there's going to be a slight performance difference. I don't know if anyone uses this as a development machine, but it's definitely not as fast as like a Core i3, i5, or i7. And the 1.3 gigahertz doesn't help a whole lot. But I did win this. This was free. I won it last year at Mix. So PDC 2 years ago, I don't know if anyone was lucky enough to go there, but everyone got a free computer. And then like 6 months later, I go to Mix and I won this in a raffle. So I won two laptops in a matter of, 6 months maybe. The only problem is they're just not awesome developer machines. They're good computers. This is multi-touch, so it's kind of cool. So you can experiment with, the Silverlight touch stuff. And I think that this HP Touch Smart 2, I'm sure they have newer models now, but compared to something like from Acer, this actually has a really good touch experience. So if you're looking for something to test on touch, try the HP Touch Smart. So anyway, that's my story. I was a little nervy there. We'll see how this goes. I have a few slides. I actually did back these up. Not too many slides. We're going to spend most of the time in Visual Studio going through two concepts today. We're going to cover RIA services is one area. And then the other area is doing like out-of-browser applications, using drag and drop, using COM interop. So you kind of get a full, well-rounded view of using Silverlight 4. We're not going to do Silverlight 5. I have that actually installed on this computer, not this one. I wasn't quite sure the stability of it, so I didn't think I would introduce that yet. Plus, it's not going to be released for a while anyway, so I want to make sure everything we do today is actually doable. How many folks today are actually using Silverlight? Good, great. That's a good number. So how many people are using HTML5? Yeah, so there you go. Weird, isn't it? Okay, so let's talk about this stuff. So my name's Jason Barris. I manage the interaction design, PM evangelism at Infragistics. I've been an MVP for many years, did several Silverlight books. Latest one was called Silverlight 4 Professional. From Rocks Press. I don't know if we'll do a Silverlight 5, but that would be interesting. There's some neat new features in Silverlight 5. I don't know if anyone went to Jeff's talks this morning, but he talked about some pretty cool stuff there. I do a lot of speaking on the Ineta Speaker Bureau, even though that's not so popular anymore. In the U.S., they have a lot of regional speaker bureaus now where anyone can kind of go speak at user groups, and Ineta tries to help pay for a little bit of the T&E. Infragistics, we have a booth out there. We build user experience controls and components for ASP.NET, Windows Forms, Silverlight, WPF, you name it, every platform. We really do focus on data visualization, grids, high-performance scenarios, high loading, high data volume, real-time throughput on those platforms. And if you're interested in that for Silverlight, come by our booth and get a demo because we have a lot of awesome stuff in that area. Here's some pictures of some of the neat things you can build. Pretty much anything that makes the UI look beautiful. Locations all over the world. I'm from New Jersey. The folks that are here are actually from the UK office. But as you can see, we've got engineering, marketing, sales all over the place. Our main development is done between Uruguay, Bulgaria, USA, and France. So let's easy agenda. We're basically just going to go in Visual Studio. We'll do an end-to-end RIA services app so you can understand what RIA services is, kind of what it offers you. Then we'll go into another app, which will go through COM interop out of browser. We'll do some export to Excel, some drag and drop. So what's cool about RIA services is it actually kind of makes the type of development you're used to doing in a Windows Forms environment or an ASP.NET environment into Silverlight. So when Silverlight first came out, Silverlight 1 and 2, minimal tooling for data access, Silverlight 3, it got better. But I was here 2 years ago doing a talk on doing business applications with Silverlight 3, and the data access story was much different because we didn't have RIA services. What we had was, you know, access to services, which is great, right? I can access a WCF service, a plain old web service, through asynchronous patterns in the Silverlight client, get my data and bind it. That was kind of hard, though. So when you're coming from Windows Forms and you're seeing that everything in Silverlight, especially data access, ends up being asynchronous, you're like, I don't know about that. I'm not used to that. I'm not going to jump and dive into Silverlight. So RIA services actually changes that, and it takes that asynchronous stuff out of the equation. Even though everything is still running asynchronously, to you as a developer building an app, you're building it as if you were building a synchronous application, which is nice because that's what we're used to building. So RIA services also does a bunch of other stuff. It's sort of like magic. It has some assemblies that really marry together the server code that you're writing, like the service stuff, shared code, validation code, and builds proxies to make it available on the client. So we have two tiers here, or as many tiers as you want, actually. But the idea is somewhere on a server, you've got databases and database access, and then you have a browser user running a Silverlight plugin in a client. When you're developing that, you want to have access to the server stuff because it makes it easy. You want strong type. You want IntelliSense. And really, that's what RIA services is bringing us. It's bringing us a much simpler environment to develop applications and deploy applications. So a lot of the patterns that we're used to for the client-server stuff, for N-tier stuff in ASP.NET, is available through RIA services. So when folks talk about RIA services, they often say, well, that's kind of like, you know, demoware. Remember Windows Forms? You had this data sources window. I could drag and drop stuff on and build apps, and that was really just like one tier, maybe a client-server app. Well, the difference is RIA services has a solid foundation. It's really built on WCF. So the same WCF that you're using in a WPF app or a web service or a MVC app, you can use inside of RIA services. So there's no difference there. The only magic that's happening is it's helping us get those proxies on the client and giving us a better experience on the development side. Some other interesting things, when I'm using Entity Framework and I'm building out my models, RIA services understands tables, views, stored procedures. Whoops. Let's do that. 4 hours. Postpone. And actually, we don't really need the internet, so we're going to unplug. No Windows update happening here. ORM, so I think Visual Studio probably is a great ORM. If you haven't used like the Entity Framework stuff, it does give you a pretty comprehensive object relational mapping experience. Entity Framework 4.1 actually has this code-first concept where you can build your model within Visual Studio and then generate your database. So Microsoft's actually really improving this ORM experience inside of Visual Studio, and that really is what you're going to use here for RIA services. Data object tracking, this is really cool, really powerful. So what this means is I create an application today, and people are changing data. I have to actually keep track of what they change, or on every row that they change in a grid, I have to go and do a save event or get that data, cache it, and save it later. With RIA services, you actually have object tracking automatically built in to the data context that you create for the entities from the server. So what that means is you're binding your elements to this context, changing data, it's tracking it for you, and you just call a submit. And that submit then takes all those changes and pushes it up to the server and updates your database. So a lot of the hard stuff that you actually deal with today, you get for free with this object context. Shared validation, we'll take a look at some shared code today. But one of the things about this client-server aspect, so we have our website, we have our client side. If I'm writing validation code or some sort of business rules in a separate project, how do I make sure I have access to that in a strong typed way down on my client? Well, you can actually rename classes, classname.shared.cs, and then the proxy will get generated for that class on the client. So then you have strong type there. You can build successfully. You don't have to worry about it. And we'll take a look at that. And then, of course, all the built-in security. So what you also have with RIA services, and actually any Silverlight application, but RIA services in their project template gives you a little bit more capability because of the built-in templates and screens they give you, is the authentication mechanism through the ASP.NET providers. So you can actually check if a user's in a role, check security, check if a person's logged in, do code-level authentication on executing methods. So you have a lot of capability there. So how does this work? It's real easy. There's a built-in template in Visual Studio called the Business Application Template. You don't even have to use that. You can create a simple Silverlight application. There's a little checkbox that says Enable RIA Services. Then all of a sudden, those assemblies are added to your project, and you can go ahead and take advantage of these capabilities, which gives you that awareness of the server side and client side proxy. So this is sort of the process here. Remember, we have a web server, and then we have a client piece. On the web server, what we're going to do is create a data model. We're going to use Entity Framework. You can use Link to SQL. You can use anything you want. What that does is gives you the ability then to create a service layer on top of that. So we'll use the domain service template, which Visual Studio gives us. One of the nice things about the domain service template in RIA Services is you can auto-generate your CRUD and metadata that's associated with the model. So that means you don't have to go ahead and if you're using the customers table or a stored procedure or a view and start writing a bunch of code yourself, that gets automated. You don't have to do that, but it does simplify things. So what happens is you build this domain service, you get your metadata classes on the server, you can have shared code, shared validation. That gets built. And then on the client, you actually have this domain context. So the domain context is what you create. This is that proxy that gets created, and it has your entity object, your queries, you use load operations to actually get data into the objects and then submits to actually submit changes back to the client. So it's a very simple thing here. Really you're creating an instance. What you're doing is you're creating any model, creating a service, creating an instance of a domain context, and then you're just kind of writing code. You can use drag and drop. You can do it all through code. It's 100% up to you. We'll do both today. So here's what we'll do right now. We'll close out PowerPoint. We'll go into Visual Studio. We'll do an entity model, domain service. We'll do some basic RIA service stuff, and then we'll jump into using COM, Excel, drag and drop, et cetera. So let me minimize this. So this Visual Studio project open, that's cool. All right, so let's go ahead and right-click, open up a new instance of Visual Studio. What we're going to do is create the Silverlight business application template, and we'll walk through that real quick, do a new project. So you have Silverlight installed, everything's going well. You're starting to create your new Silverlight business application. Your boss said, let's do something really cool. You're like, yeah, let's do Silverlight. I saw a presentation on RIA Services, and it's pretty simple to do. So here's the business app. There's a bunch of, Silverlight application. I installed some of the templates. So this is a Cosmopolitan template. It's just the resource dictionaries. You've got the navigation application. You've got RIA Services libraries, and all of these are just optional. I actually installed through the add-in mechanism as V6 files through Visual Studio. So if we go ahead and do a Silverlight business application, and there's two of them in there, I'm not quite sure why. We'll see what happens here. I think when I installed those templates, it might have installed a duplicate template. But you'll notice here on the bottom it says it's creating business application 6. So this is going and building a standard Silverlight experience where I have my web project and then my server project. So this is what I get with my RIA Services app. It actually takes a little bit longer than a normal app because it's adding a lot more stuff from the template. So on my website, let's wait for this guy to create. It does a build. Get our client bin. There we go. All right. So on the website, you have your normal stuff. You've got your client bin. There's a few additional folders added, models, resources, services, and then you've got your test page. If we drill into models, when I talked earlier about some of the security mechanisms that you get built into this template, you've got a couple class files here, username or registration data, so you can do data validation on the automatic registration. here's some shared code. You'll notice this is called user.share.cs. So what happens here is because I have the shared name on it, this display name property is going to be available on my client. So just through the process of naming it shared, everything in this class is available on the client for me. So when I type in, you know, get friendly name or this friendly name property, it's actually going to use this server code, but I have access to it on the client. It just makes my life a little bit easier. Then on the client side, you'll notice there's a bunch more stuff here than in a normal Silverlight project. We've got assets, controls, helpers, lives, so just a bunch of different fields, extensions, things that are helping me build out more of a business application. You notice here, here's my registration data, here's my user, and here's my login info. So this is stuff that was shared from the client. Then, of course, I have my views. So the views we've got are about, error window, home, and then in web, we've got some resources for globalization. So what this does is you'll notice in mainpage.xaml, if I look at this template, a little different than the navigation template, it's actually using resources to bind to message strings. So it's, you know, sort of abstracted out from you typing in the names of the of what you want displayed, so you can do it in different languages. So that's what you get when you do a business application. And the Rhea services pieces are actually built in automatically. So what you're getting here is service model domain services.hosting. You have your domain services server. Of course, you can do data annotations. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But it's just a bunch of stuff to help you get along. We're not going to use any of that. So I'm going to close it out. And I'm going to open up a new version of Visual Studio, new instance. And we're just going to create a simple navigation application. We're going to do this for two reasons. We're not going to use any of the authentication, registration, login stuff, so it just kind of slows down the build process. And the second reason is I want you to see you can add Rhea services to any project that you currently have. You don't actually need to start from scratch with the business application template. So we'll do a Silverlight navigation application. I'll click OK. You'll notice here it says enable WCF Rhea services, so that will bring this into, or it'll add the correct assembly references so I can use Rhea services. So the first thing we're going to do with this application is get some data into it. So I'm going to add a domain model. We'll use Northwind, and we'll do like customers, orders, order details, a few tables. So let's go down to our web application. I'm going to right click. I'm going to add a new item. We'll go to data. So I'm using an ADO.NET entity model. You can use a SQL Server database, link to SQL classes. Doesn't really matter what you use. It's really up to you. It's up to how you're doing your data access. This happens to be a pretty cool way to do it. An entity framework is something that Microsoft is constantly adding new features to. Entity Framework 4.1 just came out that has the code first capability. It lets you do complex objects, so it's getting more interesting what you can do with EF. So let's generate from the database. So we have Northwind. Northwind entities is fine. We'll click next, and we'll select our table. So this is your standard, you know, database wizard. This part's a little bit slow on this computer. I don't know why. All right, there we go. Cool. So let's do customers, employees, orders, and order details. And we'll click finish. So what this does is it creates the model. This takes a second or two. But essentially, once this is created, then I have this like ORM experience inside of Visual Studio 2010. This is a new feature in 2010, and with EF 4.1, like I said, you just even get more features around code first. So I could go into a table, start modifying properties on tables. I have the primary and foreign key relationships on all my tables here, so it makes life fairly easy. So let this load up. Next thing we're going to do is create a domain service. So this is doing something with the toolbox here, it looks like. Let's let it finish. Any questions while this is going on? I'm sure someone has a question. Lars, you have a question? No? Oh, it's cool. Okay, thank you. Yes. Have I used 4.1 with Rhea services? On this machine, yes. And I haven't had any problems. Have I used like code first? No. But I do have it installed and it's being used. What's that? This, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't, and we'll see. Maybe it just has to dry out, you know. Apple doesn't have a very friendly return policy. Yeah, it's a goner. All right, so we've got this, our data model's done. So this is cool. We really won't go into too many details here. You normally don't mess with this, right? You're just creating a data model. And maybe this isn't a separate project. It's really up to you. So the next thing we want to do is add a service on top of this. Now keep in mind, if you're not doing a data model right within this project, the service can come from anywhere. You can add a new service. It doesn't really matter. So let's go ahead and add a domain service class. So here we have our domain service class. We'll call this our Northwind domain service. Click OK. And this is something that you'll have to sort of deal with. What happens is this dialog pops up when you add your domain service, and what it wants to do is give you an opportunity to create all of the CRUD classes for this particular entity model. Now, what happens with Visual Studio is that you don't get the list of entities unless you actually build the application first. So you have to actually build. So we'll go ahead and build. And the build was successful. And we'll right-click again. Whoops. We'll right-click again, and we'll add this domain service. So you have to just make sure that you build beforehand. So let's go ahead and add our Northwind service again. Let's do a capital. Okay. So now you get this magical dialog. You don't have to use this, but it just makes your life easier, because you can go ahead and write all this yourself. I'm going to do customer order, employee order detail. We can enable editing on any one of these. I'll enable editing on customer and order. If you want to do an OData, read-only OData endpoint, you can. It will generate that for you as well. You could just do that. And then this checkbox down here, generate associated classes for metadata. I suggest you do this, because you can add things like simple validation, and we'll modify the metadata to do like hierarchical data sets or entities being passed up to the client. So I would always generate metadata for these classes. So now it very quickly creates a domain service. And you'll see here what it's done. We have get customers. We have insert customers. Delete customers. So essentially, it has taken all of my entities and created the code that I need to access those entities in my Silverlight app. So if I go ahead and build this, what happens? Through the linkage of the Visual Studio solution between these two projects, because it knows it's a Rhea services project, I build it, and on my client side, if I go and I view invisible code here, whoops, it has a generated code folder now that's hidden, and here's my generated code. So what's in my generated code? A bunch of stuff. But essentially what we have are all of the entities available to us here on the client now that were created on the server. So the domain service on the server creates or generates a domain context for the client that I create an instance of to work with my data. So if we look here, you can see it actually does a lot of stuff. Here's my domain context. This is what I actually want to create an instance of. And you'll notice here the URI, it's creating an instance of the web service and all of my CRUD here, order details, orders, my get customers, etc. So this is all auto-generated. Normally, when you're doing a web service, with just doing plain old CLR objects or a plain old web service. You have to use strings. You don't have the strong typing. You don't have this proxy. So this just makes life easy. So let's go ahead into views. Let's right-click, add, new item. We'll add a Silverlight page. We'll call this customers. And I'll go to my mainpage.xaml, and I'll add a link to this customers page. What we'll do is we'll just load up some data in the customers page. So here, if you're not familiar with the navigation framework, this is a nice feature that was added in Silverlight 4, I believe. What it allows you to do is use a URI mapper in a frame control to map things that are in the address bar to folders and pages in your project. So what happens in this case, if the URI that's coming across in the address bar is empty, I want the mapped URI to go to views-home.xaml. So it's going to go to views-home.xaml. If the URI is /page name, I want it to go to views/page name. So now that we did customers, we'll go down here. We'll just use a hyperlink button. A hyperlink button actually has the navigate URI property. So we'll go ahead and paste that in. And let's hit enter there so you can see everything. Let's get rid of these names. Divider 1 we don't need, and link 2, those would have been errors. And what we'll change here is navigate URI instead of to about. We're going to navigate to customers. Like so. So now when we click customers, we'll go to customers. So now what are we going to do on customers? Let's go load up this data into a grid. We'll go to the toolbox. I'll pin this here. We'll scroll down. We will find, let's go to design. We have the data grid control. There we go. And there's our data grid. One thing we want to do on this data grid is in the XAML, the default experience for the grid is that it doesn't, when you bind data to it or set it to a context, it doesn't actually generate the column, so it just shows up blank. So here, auto-generate columns always defaults to false. So let's set this to true. And let's go back here to our customers CS class. So now we want to create an instance of this context and use some of this strong type data that we created through our domain service. So what I want to do is create a variable here on my class level which represents my Northwind context. So here, if I type in Northwind, you'll notice I'm not getting any IntelliSense. The reason being, I have to do a using statement for this namespace, my Silverlight application 15.web. So if I was using it in a folder, I would have to, you know, properly set the folder, but I'm not, so it's just web. So now, when I type in Northwind, what you end up seeing, whoops, is the Northwind domain context, and we create a new instance of it. Our Northwind domain context, like so. So what this does is it reaches into that generated code. It creates an instance of the basically the domain service that we created on the web server, so now I can use it on the client. So from here, what I want to do is set the item source of my grid. So the item source is going to equal the context that I have, .customers. So I'm setting it to the customer's property. So we have this entity set collection. When we execute the query, it's going to get filled up, and that's what we're going to bind out to this grid. And so then I can call load, and this is an overloaded method. So you can see there's a bunch of them here, but this is the one that we're going to use. We're going to pass load, the entity query that we created for get customers. So here I just say ctx.getCustomersQuery, and that's all I need to do, and we're done. So if we build this now, we'll go ahead and run it. Like magic, we'll have a grid with data inside of it. So we'll view this in the browser. We'll click customers. So normally, I would have to create a method that passes the execution of that query to a delegate. That delegate then waits for the response from the server, and then I can bind it to the grid. In this case, what I'm doing is using RIA services. That asynchronous operation is actually still happening, but I don't have to do the asynchronous coding myself. So just like that, we've got a grid with a bunch of data in it, and I didn't really have to do a whole lot of hard code. So now the other thing I can do here is go back to my customers page. We'll go to design mode. I'll add a button to this guy. And our button will be our save changes. So when we talk about that data context, so let's call this save changes. And on its click, we're going to do a new event handler. We'll do button1.click. So what do I want to do here? I have CTX, right? So on CTX, I can actually just submit changes. So what that does is no matter what I type in to the grid or to fields on my form, it's going to continue to track that in the client in this domain context. Then I can submit those changes back to the server. If I want to check if there are changes yet, I can actually say if CTX, whoops, dot, has changes, then go ahead and save those changes. I'll say, hey, there's nothing to save, or you just don't do it, you ignore it. So it's up to you how you want to handle that. It's best to actually wrap it, add some error checking, et cetera. So let's go ahead and build this. And we'll submit some changes back to the server. And then we'll look at some validation. So the metadata classes that we created is really where you can do some very basic attribute-based validation. And it's not really basic. It's the way validation works with the data annotation. So let's go ahead and view this in the browser. We'll do customers again. For this guy here, we'll change city to Jersey. And for this guy here, we'll change it to, you know, JJJ. And we'll do it like that. Save changes. Let's refresh this page. Go back to customers. And you can see that those changes got submitted. So I didn't have to worry about tracking for each row. I actually just let the domain context, which was class level for this particular page, and it tracked it for me. I submit those changes. It goes back to the server. So let's do something a little more deep. Let's look at this metadata class. So remember the domain service? This has all of my queries. The metadata class has all of the metadata represented by my entities. So this is where I could do more interesting stuff. So here I have my customer metadata. Here I have my employee metadata. And you can see that they give you some examples on how you can actually attribute fields in these classes for validation. So I can do require, do a regular expression, make sure that the string is a certain length. We can do something like... I think region's a good candidate because it's normally blank. So I can just say region is required. Now, region being required means if I try to submit those changes and it's empty, I'm going to get an error. So what's cool about the controls, like the data grid and the data form, is that they automatically have that validation UI built in. Now, the other thing that I want to do here, well, actually, we'll do that in a second. Let's just go ahead and build this guy. We'll run it in the browser. Oops. Hit the number 3 here. Shoots. Let's build this. All right, view him in the browser. No. And we'll try to edit that first one again. So you'll notice here, if I scroll to the right, region is empty. Let me go ahead and change something here. So it says error region field is required. So if I hit escape and get out of there, I'm not in edit mode anymore. But if I, as soon as I go into edit mode, it says, hey, the region field's empty. You can't proceed any further. And if since I didn't have any error handling on my save changes, I would get an exception. So this is actually built in. There's another control called the data form, which has this built in as well. Unfortunately, I noticed the data form, I don't have the toolkit installed on this machine, but what the data form does is it gives you, you drag this control onto the page, and there is a current item property and it'll actually let you select a row and bind the row of the grid through element-to-element binding to this data form, and you could do data entry that way too. So it'll auto-generate all of your data entry fields, which is awesome, and it's great to see, but I don't have it installed on this computer. I don't have the toolkit installed. All right, so let's go back to our website. So we saw a little validation. Let's go back to our domain service. And what I want to do here is I want to update this query. Actually, I want to create a new query. And in this query, here we have get customers. I want to name it get customers with orders. And what get customers with orders is going to do is I want to include in my query all of the orders that go along with customers. So in Northwind, we have all this hierarchy with customers, orders, order details, employees, and all that. Well, using link, we have this include statement that we can use to say, in this query, include all these other entities that are associated with this object that I'm querying. So in this case, we want to use customers, we want to include orders. Now, we have to make a change to the metadata class, though. So inside of the metadata class, we've got the customer metadata. So here's all of the customer properties. And you'll notice that through the foreign key, it knew that there was this entity collection for orders. These are the orders that I want to include. So I have to actually attribute this field with include. So there's the include attribute. Whoops. So now when I build this and I run that query, it'll actually go ahead and include that for me. So let's go ahead and build this. And I want to show you something here. Yes, sir. 4.0. Yep. Everything here, this is Silverlight 4, Entity Framework 4.0. It's just the base install.
And is there a maximum depth? Can you include the order details also?
Yep. You can include order details. You can attribute multiple fields in the metadata. I mean, you can attribute multiples across the different metadatas. So maybe order details has like categories. You could actually go into that entity and include those as well. So where this becomes cool is a couple things. So let's go ahead and add a new view here, and we'll call this one customer's orders. Now you saw before I did a couple lines of code to create that object context. There's actually a control that does that as well. There's a domain data source control that you can set a property for the query and then bind that domain data source to a grid or a data form, and it'll actually just do the same thing that we did in code. So you actually don't even have to write any code. So on this page here for customer order XAML, I've got my screen here. I'm going to go to the data sources window. And what this is doing is it's saying, okay, what data sources did we have in this metadata class that I can make available to the client? And it says we got customer, employees, orders, and order details. Now keep in mind, when we were doing this in Windows Forms, it was all kind of in one tier. This actually is using the service metadata to just expose this to me to work with on my client. This is doing the same WCF that we did just by creating a domain context, or the same WCF if we did this manually. And the reason this is cool is because from here, I can select an object, and I can do things like view the fields, see its relationships. If I drop this down, I can select certain controls to actually use to drag this onto the form. So let's say I want a details form. I can select the query that I want to use. So let's use get customers with orders query. Let's drag this guy onto the form. So this will add our data grid. And what this did was, if we go to the XAML, remember before I had to say auto-generate field equals true and all that stuff. It was kind of a pain. Well, this is still auto-generate equals false, but because I grabbed it from the data sources window, it knows all the metadata is available to it, so it went ahead and created all the controls for me and all the bindings. The control that we're using here is the domain data source control. So this domain data source, by the very nature of it being in XAML declaratively at design time and having a query name property, get customers with orders query, it's actually going to create an instance of my domain context and execute this query and then do the binding. So I don't have to write any code. If I run this right now, it just works. We're going to do one more thing here, though. So I'm going to drag my orders on. So let's drag this orders table on. So let's go. We'll just leave that where it's at. Let's go back to our XAML. So what did this actually do? It added the orders grid. So here, you'll notice we've got a data grid. If we hit the enter key here, its item source is the customer orders view source. So when we drag this onto the form, we actually have this collection view source control. So what this is doing is this is a container, again, for the results of the query, the query that I'm get customers with orders, and this is where the orders are going to get stored for the binding to that orders table. So between the domain data source and this collection view source, I have the relationships that I need for this page. So if I go now to my mainpage.xaml, and let's just add a link to this guy, like so, and this will be customers' orders. And we'll just add friendly name here, and we'll build it. And we'll run it. Come on. It's thinking about something here, doing something really important. There we go. All right. So our page comes up. We go to customer's orders. I select my customer. And you'll notice I have this hierarchy now. So how cool is that? No lines of code, drag and drop. It created the relationships through the entity model. The domain service creates metadata that I can modify that gets pumped down to the shared code. And then through creating this entity, the domain context, I get the entity collection through the query, and the relationship stuff is handled for me through those controls. So I don't actually have to do anything very clever to make this happen. I just did a couple changes, and you have sort of a master detail scenario, which is pretty slick. Now, in another sample that I have here, just to jump ahead a little bit for time, I have a master detail grid. Let me look here at these pages. Annual grid, hierarchical grid. So this guy here, you'll notice in the other, in the sample we just looked at, we had our domain data source, which had our query. So this one here has the, that's loaded data, has get customers with orders query. It's basically the same query. But the difference here is I'm using a different grid. I actually don't even know if I have this grid installed. Let's see if it shows up at design time. It doesn't. So let's run it and see if it shows up. This grid might not be installed, but I wanted to show you that, for example, the Infragistics grid handles that collection view source for you. So it looks at the contents of the domain data source, and it will it'll do the hierarchy. Oh, here it is, hierarchy, wrong one. Oh, it seems to be okay. So what this does is it has the built-in hierarchy. So I just have to put this grid onto the form, and then I have the hierarchy view under each row. So there's the Microsoft grid, which has one basically level of grouping. This can do multiple levels of hierarchy, and it can do some other things like, you know, column pinning, column moving. You can actually do grouping. So if I group Here I have groups by like sales representative, accounting manager, et cetera. So you can do some fancier things with this grid. But the basic idea is that either way, once I do that include, I actually have access to the other data. Now, another sort of interesting scenario here is slightly different UI, but accomplishing the same thing, but although in code. Oftentimes, you don't want to use the drag and drop. The drag and drop might fall short. You can do a bunch with that domain data source, but you know, you still want to jump into your code to do something like, you know, select something from a list, go back to the server, basically control your queries. So on this screen, I've got a combo box and a grid, and we'll look at the code here. You'll notice I'm doing the same thing. I'm creating an instance of my Northwind context. In my onNavigated to, I'm setting the item source of my grid to my orders table. I'm setting the item source of my combo box to the employees table, or the employees property, essentially. And then I'm calling get employees query. So what's going to happen there, and in fact, we'll turn on the internet now. Maybe this will work, maybe it won't. We'll see. What's going to happen here is it's going to load up my combo editor with my employees. So what do I want to do on my selection changed event of the combo box? I actually want to go ahead and execute a query. So I want to go get all of the orders for this particular employee. So I have a query called get orders by employee ID query, which of course is in my service class. So here's my service class again. Here's get orders by employee ID, same deal. Orders where employee ID equals the employee ID that I'm passing in. So it's just a query with a parameter. Now the interesting piece of code here is this entity container. So here's what happens is you have this entity container object. When I go ahead and get a query and I fill it with the entities, that container has information in it, right? So if I go back and do another query and I add stuff to it, it just keeps adding it to the container. So what you really need to do is make sure that that entity container is clear before you're doing a binding, or else the user is just going to start seeing the data that was there, and then the other data, then the other data. So make sure that you clear out this entity container before you do something like a selection change event on a combo box. So if we view this one in the browser, same concept, it's a master detail, slightly different UI. So here I have my employees. I select an employee, and their orders show up. Another employee, their orders show up. You'll notice here that they're all employee ID 3. If I didn't clear that entity container, I would see the 1, the 3s, and the 6s now. They would all just keep adding together and adding together. The reason I plugged in the internet, whoops, I don't know why that happened. The reason I plugged in the internet is there's pictures that are supposed to populate here, but I think that I didn't have those in this table it's actually on this computer. So I had a custom template on the combo box. So the combo boxes are basically pretty boring. Silverlight makes it really easy to do pretty spectacular stuff with XAML. So here in the XAML, I just retemplated the combo box. So here I have a data template. Here's the combo box item template. And this is the infragistics combo box. It doesn't matter. This is the same exact code for the default combo box. I just happen to always use the infragistics controls, obviously. So here's the data template. I just add a grid, and I want to add some text blocks in an image. So I kind of have the person's name, their city, and then their image. So their image would have showed up because I have PhotoPath in the table in Northwind here, which is off to an internet address. So that's kind of slick the way that works. And you can do this. That's the cool thing about XAML. You can basically retemplate anything however you'd like. It doesn't really matter. So that is pretty much a good grounded look at RIA services and sort of the capabilities you have. You know, I would strongly suggest if you're coming from like a Windows Forms or an ASP.NET and you're looking at Silverlight, you look at RIA services to start with. Get comfortable with the capabilities of Silverlight. It's really easy to do data access. The difference between the drag and drop and the writing of the code, of course, when you write code, you have a little bit more control. You have a little bit more flexibility in when you're doing queries, the timing of those queries. If you want to go ahead and do everything asynchronously, you can still do that with RIA services. You don't have to remove that from the equation. So the next thing I want to do is talk about some com interop and out-of-browser stuff. So let me close out these Visual Studios. Let me open up a new project, and we're going to go through this real quick. We got about 20 minutes left. So here, let's see. I've got a solution already created. I'm not going to write any code here. I'm just going to point out some areas that are important. And a lot of this out-of-browser stuff is you just work through properties on the actual project. So this is pretty cool. They've improved this even more with Silverlight 5. So Silverlight 4 has out-of-browser. I have the ability to use a dynamic keyword to work with COM objects that are installed on the client machine. Now, Silverlight 5, I can actually do more with accessing local assemblies on the client machine. So they're just continuing to kind of merge this more with WPF capabilities as far as the types of applications I can build. And of course, if you hear about the HTML5 message, it sounds like, you know, Silverlight is your line of business sort of RIA experience, and HTML5 is what you want to do for the web experience. But what I have here is I believe this might be a RIA services app. It really doesn't matter. I actually have a page here that has a grid, and it has a couple buttons on it. So let's take a look. First off, let me just look at mainpage.xaml real quick and see what we're loading up here. So I've got page 1 and page 2. I'm not sure the differences. Let's see. They both might be the same. Oh, no, page 1 is the one we want. Cool. So what page 1 has is a grid, a couple buttons on it. And what we're doing here is we're not going to load data from a database. We're actually going to load data from an Excel file. We're going to kind of go through this out-of-browser elevated permissions experience. Then we're going to export this grid to Excel, and then we're going to email a copy of this Excel file in the grid. Now, the reason this is all cool is because these are all new features for Silverlight 4 that you really couldn't do before, and they're just getting better with Silverlight 5. So if I right-click up here on my properties for my Silverlight application, let's take a look at what we have. We've got this out-of-browser setting button. So when I uncheck this and I view this in the browser, I just have the plugin runs, and you know I can interact with the Silverlight app. It looks great. If I want to enable it to out-of-browser, it means a local instance of this Zap is installed in sort of this assembly cache for Zaps on my client. So it installs. Actually, I install it out-of-browser. It goes back to the server, gets a Zap, installs it locally, adds an icon to my desktop or my start menu. That's what I'm working with. Now, in the out-of-browser settings, we have this required elevated trust when running outside a browser. What does that do? It gives me capabilities like looking into the file system, accessing areas like my documents, my pictures, my videos, and it lets me do com interop. So I am going to require elevated trust for this application. Now, if we go back to page 1, you'll notice here we've got our grid. On the grid, I want to enable the ability to drag a file onto that grid and then read that file from the file system. Again, that has to happen with elevated trust, because I'm going into the file system, getting a file, and physically reading it using the system.io in Silverlight. So that's something that you really don't want users to be able to do unless they know this is something that's happening with an elevated trust. So let's let this toolbox thing do its deal. And then the other thing we're going to go through real quickly once we see the code is the dynamic keyword. I don't know if anyone's used the dynamic keyword. It's in C# 4, it's in Silverlight 4, but it allows you to create an instance of an object, and the compiler at design time, when you compile, it doesn't actually check to make sure that it's there. So you assume that that's going to be there at runtime when the application is running. So you want to create an instance of Outlook, you're just assuming Outlook is there. You want to create an instance of Excel, you're just assuming Excel is there. This is interesting, too, because if you have old school DLLs written in C++ that are COM servers, that means you can still use those in your Silverlight apps. Make sure they're installed locally, create instances of them through the dynamic keyword. But what I did here on this grid is I set allow drop equals to true. So you weren't able to do this in Silverlight 3. Drag and drop is Silverlight 4. So by that very nature, I have my drop events. So in my drop events, I can do things like look into the drop event args or drag event args, get the e.data. What's my e.data? Well, the e.data I'm going to cast to a file, and I'm going to get the file info because I know this is actually coming from the file system. So once I get that, I can basically do whatever I want. And in this case, what I'm doing is I'm using an Excel assembly, and I'm just creating an instance of a workbook, creating an instance of a worksheet, and I'm pumping the data into the cells. So let's go ahead and run this and see how this works. Now, there's a UI thing that happens here. I put this on the home.xaml, install application locally before continuing. So here what you see is some code on this loaded that's checking to see what the install state is of this application. So if this is not installed locally, it's saying, hey, you got to install this locally for this to work because it needs to be run out of browser for the capabilities to actually work. You can't just do drag and drop unless it's installed out of browser. So here we have if the current state is installed, don't show the button. If it's not installed, show the button. So if I go to my Excel import here and I try to take my Excel file, which is right here, and drag it onto the grid, I get an access is denied because it's not installed out of browser. So let's go back to home, install this locally. Because I have elevated trust, I get this like particularly loud warning message like, hey, this is publisher cannot be verified. Are you sure? If I'm not actually asking for elevated permissions, I don't get this yellow. It's a blue or something like that. So the yellow means, hey, this is something important. I'm going to go ahead and install this out of browser. So let's close out that browser. We can close this guy. We have a shortcut now on our opened up. You know, hey, everything's good, right? Go to Excel import. Remember, I had that Excel file here. I want to drag this onto my form. So what happens is I still get access denied. The reason is this is in, like, my Dropbox folder, actually. So this is not in my documents. You only have access to my documents, my videos, my pictures, several of the my enum, like the get special folder. You don't have access to desktop. You don't have access to like the user folders. So here I have the same Excel file in my documents. I drag it on, and the drop event occurred, and it added that stuff to the grid. So it actually read the file info, got the string, and read it into the grid. So now I can work with this in the grid, do whatever I want, update to a database. What I actually want to do is export this to Excel. So now the interesting thing is the export process here is using the file save dialog. This is a user-initiated process, so I clicked it, so I kind of know what I'm doing, right? Because I'm a user, I'm smart, I would never install a virus. That means I can save this actually wherever I want, desktop, Dropbox, documents. It doesn't really matter. So let's stick this over on my desktop. We'll call it 123.xls. We'll save it. You'll notice here this pop-up window. This is new in Silverlight 4 as well. You've got the a pop-up toast sort of experience that I'll show you how to do. It's pretty cool. You can template it, make it look real nice. So here's our Excel file. So this just took the contents of the grid, created an Excel object, added a worksheet, called it data sheet, and then, you know, added it like so. If I want to go through the same process, I can do the same thing. Now we can do email grid. Now this is interesting as well. So we'll just leave this open, and I'll show you this code for email grid. So let's scroll down. Well, on the way here, look at save, export. This is the save button click. So I clicked my Excel save, and it says alert done, export to Excel completed. So here's the save export. You'll notice I just create a save file dialog, and I'm saving my stream out to the file name. That was my Excel file. And then my alert done is a notification window. So this notification window, remember that data template that we did? Like, if I just bound my data source to the combo box, I would have got, like, the key, right, the primary key field. So my employees dropdown would have said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And so I retemplated it for this text box. So that's basically a content presenter that I can change whatever I want. Same thing with the notification window. Basically, I can create anything and then stick it in the notification window. So in this case, I was not necessarily lazy, but short on time. So I made a text block and I just said, you know, saved or something like that. Or I passed actually a string in. So I did do some work. I added a parameter. But what that does then is you assign that to the content of the notify window. And then whatever you create ends up as the content. You call show for any number of seconds. So I said 3,000 milliseconds. It's going to pop up for 3 seconds. Looks good. So that's how you do that. And then this is my button to click. This is the dynamic keyword. So what happens with dynamic, if we scroll back up to the top, you'll notice we've got system.runtime.interopservices.automation. That is the namespace you need to use to allow you to use dynamic. So here I've got very simple code. This is the same stuff we wrote back in like 1996 when we were trying to automate like Office 95. Remember, we were so excited. Oh my gosh, I can send an email from my VB5 code. And it was like those the namespace libraries that they would always install would overwrite for every version. It was very difficult. Well, over time, that's improved. So I just have this object now that I create. So now I want to create my outlook.application through what? Through the automation factory. So the automation factory means, okay, well, really don't check this when I compile it because this probably doesn't exist here, and I hope it exists on the machine where this is running. So this is the dynamic keyword. I'm creating objects, instances of objects with dynamic. And then I just do what I normally do for automation, create an instance of an email, set the recipients, hello Silverlight, blah, 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 and there we go. So let's go back here. Let's do this. Now, this is interesting as well. Email grid, watch what happens. We get an H result, so a COM error. So we get this H result back because there was a COM error. COM errors return H results. Now you got to figure this out. The reason this happened was because it assumed that Outlook was open because that's what my code sort of had. So let's open Outlook. And let's actually unplug. Yeah, the internet's unplugged. It's not going to try to download anything. Of course, this is like a real machine. This is my real email. So I'm going to like not show too much of it. Let's minimize it. Let's do that. And let's email grid. So email. So you get your normal, you know, do you want to allow? I want to allow this. Ah, it's painful. Allow. And it'll actually send it. It's in my outbox. Hello, Silverlight. There we go. So I'm not connected, so it's kind of just sitting there. So pretty cool using COM interop. And I find this not so much interesting for Office because, you know, maybe sending an email is cool. The Excel assembly I used, that was not automating Excel. You can automate Excel. That was an infragistics assembly that you don't require Excel to actually use Excel. But if you're moving from legacy apps or you have assemblies or DLLs that are COM servers, and that was kind of holding you back from Silverlight because, oh, well, we can't access that on the client. Well, now you can still use all of that, like, business stuff that you've been using for years in a Silverlight application. So it's fairly slick. All right. Let's see. I think that was all she wrote for this stuff. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let me go back. I've got, I think, two more slides just to wrap up, and then we're done. All right, so that was drag and drop. That was COM interop, export to Excel, sort of some neat things there. And I hope you saw that none of it's actually hard to do. It's actually very small amounts of code.
Is this working on all of the browsers?
this is only working out of the browser? Yes. Good question. So I need not only out of the browser, but elevated privileges. So if I don't check this box here, right click, properties, out of browser, require elevated trust, okay, build. And actually, the other thing is, when I was doing out of browser applications, like the first thing I wondered is, how do I uninstall this thing? All you got to do is right click and remove. So you remove this app and it wipes it from your machine. So that's wiped, right? So let's go ahead and run this again. View in the browser. Install it locally. Notice I didn't require elevated permissions. It's a much calmer, peacefuler dialogue. Click OK. I'm good there. Let's minimize that. Let's go to my Excel. Let's go to my Excel data. Denied. So because I didn't require elevated permissions, I still can't do it. Now, this dialogue, this is important. This dialogue here, the one that's kind of scary looking and it's orange and not very nice, because I'm doing elevated permissions, you can sign your assemblies with your company name and your logo and it looks beautiful, right? So that's kind of this shocking, oh my gosh, scary. But if you're, you know, an entity that has signed assemblies that can be verified, then you can actually have that look really nice. So the end user, when they install this out of the browser, let's remove it. Oh, I didn't. It's in my start menu, I guess. La, la, la. Higher. Thank you. Remove, yes. Thank you. Right click, view in the browser. So this orange dialogue here can say, you know, xyz.com, your beautiful logo, look all peaceful, and, you know, customers trust you, right? So this is just unverified. So that's the difference. All right. So Ria Services, hopefully you got the point there that that's super easy to do the whole CRUD experience. I showed you as far as the CRUD, the domain service, the shared code, there's some validation. That's pretty much like all the stuff you can do. And now it's a matter of you like putting together your queries and understanding how you want to set up your pages. The interesting thing about the shared code is you could actually do additional classes with like shared business logic that you want down on the client. So you can take that and do a lot with it. Your metadata, you could abstract this stuff out into like different view models, and you know, you don't have to worry about things getting overwritten. You don't have to use any of the auto-generated code either. So the first thing that always comes up with ORMs is, well, what happens if the database changes? Well, this doesn't have anything to do with that. Like the auto-generated code, you don't have to auto-generate it again. You can just go ahead and rebuild your entity model. So the entity model is separate from that class. And that class you can have 100% control over. The nice thing about that class is that it's a good jump start. It helps me get going, and then I control it from that point on. Anything done declaratively in XAML can be done via code. That's the other important thing, is don't look at this as, oh, I'm tied to declarative, I'm tied to XAML. You're not. Every single thing I showed you in Ria Services can be done via code. And then I showed you that infragistics grid. This was from a marketing slide. Sorry, I'll go like that. Anyway, Ria Services tools, just go to silverlight.net/get-started. You could install Silverlight 4 or 5, Silverlight 4 if you're going to do stuff today. Some cool demos just on what Silverlight can do. One of the challenges with Silverlight is that what I show, of course, is the default experience. You might want things to look more beautiful. If you look at some of the infragistics samples, we do a lot of beautiful samples. But what's cool about that for you is there's all sorts of images and resource dictionaries and styles that you can just copy the XAML and stick it in your app. So, for example, you want to have a fancy combo box that looks different, go look at one of our samples and just view source, grab the styles and stick it in your app, and it just looks nicer. So XAML's cool like that. You can just push it from app to app. That combo box with the people's faces, I can use that anywhere. It's not tied to this particular app because it's all done declaratively in XAML. Then, of course, to help my daughter go to college, feel free to purchase Silverlight 4 Professional. It's still good for at least 6-7 months before Silverlight 5 comes out, I'm sure. And if you have any questions, you can always email me or follow me on Twitter, and I'll get back to you on that. So we have 4 minutes left for questions, or you guys, thank you for coming.